got to include the minutes.
I'll make a motion to accept.
Make a motion to accept the minutes, I can.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carries, very good. All right, there are a couple guests tonight, but, legislator Liz is running a little late, so I thought maybe we'd put off the presentation while we can, and we'll do the resolutions first, get those out of the way. That'll take so long, so, all right, since we have the chairman here this evening, I think, we'll start with the resolution that he's sponsoring.
361.
361.
Establishing the policy for mental health treatment.
Move for discussion.
Move for discussion.
Second.
Questions?
Discussion.
I think.
Go ahead.
You're on.
You know, over here. Here, office
staff. Did he raise his hand?
Okay. And then is he yielding?
I'll yield to the chairman.
There we go.
You're on. As you know, you probably read this as part of the report that a coalition made that spent the better part of a year examining this whole epidemic and trying to move forward to find some cures, actually. But as I say, Dr. Figlio was there all the time. It was a really important part of the whole thing. I'm here to advocate for this one step at a time. Establishing a policy of 7 days a week, from some of the testimony we heard and some of the information that I personally have gotten, indicate that it's pretty important to the folks that are aware of some of the problems out there that it might be a step in the right direction, along with a few other things. You know, the executive has put money in for well, what we were calling an ombudsman, and he has a little better name for it, actually. What was the name, Jay?
Family advocate.
Public advocate, which is good, because we never know where to go or what to do. So I'm here just to advocate for this.
As a public advocate. No, I think it's a great recommendation. A few years back, we had a situation where methadone clinic would dispense a double dose on the weekends because they weren't open 7 days a week, and the methadone got in the hands of a minor, and that minor overdosed and died on that methadone. This will alleviate the dispensing of a double dose, because as much as you try to administer, you know, recovery medications to heroin addicts, it's a lifelong disease, and mistakes can be made on both ends. Funding for this, I know it probably wouldn't cost a hell of a lot more to keep it open another day. But with that, and I applaud the chairman for bringing this forward, I think we also need to try to find a way to have the state Office on Alcohol Substance Abuse, OASIS, to give us more slots on there. Because what I understand right now, the testimony of UCAN, is that there's a waiting list to get on the methadone program. And there may be 20 or 30 people on the methadone waiting list that could, you know, be benefited from methadone. So, along with this...
How many people use it? I don't know if you...
The figures were, I don't know, what was it? I think the state tells us how many people we can have on it. Mm-hmm. I just off the top of my head, I want to say 40. Does that sound...
I thought it was more than that.
Okay. 75. Yeah, I'd have to look at my notes. I'm not totally sure. The one thing about the methadone program, the methadone clinic, is you don't have to be a resident of Ulster County. And what happens is, if there's openings, let's say in Dutchess County, someone from Ulster County can go to Dutchess County and participate in the methadone program. So there's a lot of things to work out, but this is definitely a start, and I think it's a public safety issue. And it's already been demonstrated 3 years ago.
But I didn't realize the first time that I read this that this is actually establishing a policy that this
it'll be open 7 days a week.
It'll be open 7 days. Now, my only thing that I'm looking at is that in the first resolve, it's establishing the policy, and then in the second resolve, it's asking the county health department to evaluate the possibility. Is that kind of would it make some sense in order to have the county evaluate the possibilities first of the it's extending it to 7 days rather than actually creating a policy of 7 days prior to any sort of county or the health department looking into whether it's...
Well, part of our thinking, I believe, on that was, one, expand it to make it available. And two, then let's evaluate to see ways to expand it, because if there's a waiting list of 20 or 30, that's just unacceptable.
Right.
And how can we try to help combat that? I think that's where it is there, Mr. Chairman, not so much, the policy would be 7 days to make it available.
Yeah.
Now, and then what can we do from there? There may be some state legislation that we have to attempt to get introduced. That might help do that.
You know, is this a solid number of what it's going to... without the evaluation, prior to without the policy, is that a solid number that you could say is what it's going to increase?
It's as solid as I could do.
Okay. If I may,
mm-hmm.
We currently have a contract right now with the Health Alliance where we're open for 6 days, and we believe that the evaluation was done to figure out what the additional day would cost, and
okay.
Understanding that that's what they came up with.
Okay.
And you know, if I may echo legislative says, so this is an epidemic. I think it's really incredibly serious. And we could be working to get funding while we're going down the road. I mean, it's a little like when the hurricanes came, you know, the county responded. It was there, it was in the mountains where I am, and they kind of worried about being reimbursed later on. And so it's not to dismiss it, but we can't always wait for somebody else.
Right.
And we have to address it on our own.
The incident that Legislator Bill Figlio refers to happened in my legislative district.
Yep.
And methadone itself is a very powerful narcotic, and it can have the potential for overdose death, which it does, you know, sometimes unfortunately happen. And I was just doing the arithmetic vis-a-vis your discussion between Legislator Lopez and yourself on the cost of this. So assuming that, you know, 52 weeks out of the year for two extra days, it's 104 days, you know, you do the arithmetic and divide that, so it's $16,600. You're talking about just under $151 per day. So essentially, probably what they're talking about here is having one staff member administer the extra dosage, and that would be the cost, to have one extra person on staff for that day. It's a very small price to pay for trying to battle this, you know, addiction, which is, you know, proliferated throughout the entire country and this county too. And, bang for the buck, I can't imagine getting more money out of the investment that the taxpayers also kind of would put in for $151 per day to have this clinic open 7 days a week and 365 days a year. It's a bargain.
I just want to add one other thing to the chairman's, Lopez's question about the second resolve, because I believe the second resolve has to be in there because even though we could make it a policy of the county to provide treatment for 7 days, the state has to allow us to add more patients. Because if you look in there, we want to call upon the county department of health to evaluate possible actions that will expand the current methadone treatment program and or reduce the number of patients on methadone treatment wait list. That I know for sure the state handles that, and they've only given us a certain amount of slots on the methadone clinic. So that was one of the recommendations from UCAN, is to also ask the state to give us more slots. So I don't know what comes first in this case, the chicken or the egg. I believe we should have, this is the egg, and we want the county executive to eat the chicken. Of course,
we're prepared to
go over there and do that.
We're prepared to hatch it.
But I think it is in order to have that second resolve.
I see. Absolutely not.
Additionally, one of the reasons for the second resolve is one of the things that UCAN was discussing was it's something that would require a partnership with the Department of Health and local private practitioners like Dr. Harvey, who's on the coalition, who does a Suboxone treatment in his private office, which then takes, his vision is to take people off of the methadone program, have them in a Suboxone program in a private office, which would then free up a spot on the wait list. But those are things that the legislature can't necessarily pull the trigger on themselves and would need some, the Department of Health to liaison with local practitioners. So that was part of the vision for additional ways to free up spots on the program.
Okay, well,
it's
passed to go through Ways and Means, right?
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, before you go through any more of the resolutions, I would just like to logically say, now we don't have any representation from the county executive's office here. Most committees have representation. Now, I believe our representative from the county executive's office is Deputy County Executive Ken Quinnell. I know I saw him downstairs when I came in, but he hasn't been to a committee meeting in 3 months, I believe. And I'd like to make a motion for you to write a letter or a correspondence to state in the minutes and a public statement that we need county executive, a deputy county executive to be here. Because I have specific questions for certain resolutions that I can't get answered.
Have you
need the person.
Have you reached out to him personally?
I've called county executive's office this week 3 times and actually went to the county executive's office and I got no satisfaction. So I'm asking you as the chairman to require the deputy county executive to be here to answer our questions, because I'm sure he does not want to get calls from 5 different people every day about a question we have on a resolution.
We can request,
but I think it's severely handicapped.
It's up to the executive as to whether he has staff at the meeting or not.
Well, I could write a letter for request.
One logical complaint. I guess that's with the committee.
Did you email the copy of the agenda? No.
Like I said, I saw him. And no RSVP or sorry regrets, can't make it.
No, but truthfully, Public Works, we did the same thing, and then somebody comes every time.
Okay. That's fine. So,
I draft a letter to the county executive
to request that.
Yeah, I make a motion to draft a letter to the county executive to request representation from his office.
Second. All right. You will move on. You will go back to the resolution. That is 3-9 proclaiming October 15th. That's what the awareness model. Put this later in this. The sponsor.
I'll make the motion.
I'll make the
motion.
Did you want to hear the presentation before we vote on the resolution?
We can do that.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, all right.
We'll make it part of the discussion.
Absolutely.
I've had a little cold here, so I don't know if other people, I understand. So my name is Evelyn Lightbed, and thank you. The reason that I'm here is to talk about Dyslexia Day, and also dyslexia, and also action and awareness. An estimated 20% of our population, including our student population, is dyslexic. There are lots of studies from the National Institute of Health, and what we're finding is that not only is there 20% of the population, but we're also finding that we can observe the reading brain. And these people and children have reading systems set up on the right side of the brain. This is 20%. And 80% of the population has rapid word reading and reading fluency on this side of the brain. And due to these differences, and most people don't even know that these differences exist and these called learning differences in children. Due to the technologies like the fMRI machine, we can now observe these things, and we know definitely, and these have been replicated, that this is real and it occurs, because there have been interventions for over 100 years that people have used, but now we haven't had the scientific backup. We're not born reading. It's a learned skill, and students with dyslexia have difficulty breaking the code as the written word, and it makes it hard for them to read and write and spell. This also includes math, because math is also a language. Dyslexia is a learning difference, and awareness and action are necessary. Helping people to learn to read is an upstream tactic to make individuals and communities better. A study conducted as per the Department of Justice indicates the link between academic failure and delinquency and violence and crime is welded to reading failure. Statistics from the National Institutes of Health report that, okay, gonna do it.
85%.
Yes, 85% of juveniles who interface with the court system are functionally illiterate, and 53% of prison inmates can read. Now, in terms of our children, this is very, very important. They're developing. The National Institute for Literacy notes that two-thirds of children who cannot read proficiently by the end of fourth grade will end up in jail or on welfare. And frankly, I think this also interfaces with the other proposition that you just put up to, the drug use, because it does affect them emotionally as well. 43% of adults, to go back to the statistics, 43% of adults at level one literacy levels live in poverty, compared to only 4% of those who are at level five, which is community college or specialized training, two-year college, that kind of thing, is level five. Awareness and action are key. According to the U.S. government statistics cited this past March, 2015 by Governor Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, 17.5%, and that's a U.S. government statistic, so it's probably low. 17.5% of the general population is dyslexic, which is an estimated 1 in 5 people. According to the International Dyslexia Association, quote, 15 to 20% of the population as a whole have symptoms of dyslexia, including slow or inaccurate reading, poor writing, poor spelling, or mixing up similar words, end of quote. This is a huge problem. However, there are solutions to this huge problem. There are effective interventions that match the learning style of our dyslexic students, and these need to be utilized on a broad basis. People need to become aware, and action is needed. In New York State, the current primary general education reading approaches include, among other things, whole language and blended learning. These and other systems do not fix the reading and language-based problems of dyslexics. Frequently, the academic interventions themselves appear to be insufficient in addressing the specialized needs of dyslexics based on their atypical learning style. I know this is a lot to process, but evidence-based structured literacy learning interventions, like the Orton-Gillingham approach, for example, however, do address the reading and language-based difficulties of dyslexics. The Orton-Gillingham approach is a proven, time-tested, explicit, scientific approach for teaching dyslexics to read, write, and spell, and it's a bona fide multisensory approach. In New York State and other states, currently dyslexia is lumped in with specific learning disabilities and also learning disabilities terminology, and does not have a specific designation of any appropriate interventions that are evidence-based structured literacy interventions. We feel we need specific assessment criteria outlined to effectively identify our dyslexic students, and evidence-based structured literacy learning interventions are necessary for students who are dyslexic and could be designated on an individual educational plan. Again, 17.5% of students are not getting the appropriate effective instruction that is necessary for them to learn to read, write, and spell. They are experiencing failure in the classroom and frustration. Besides literacy, this can also lead to social problems and emotional problems. Only appropriate periodic screening can identify our dyslexic children early so that they can get appropriate instructional help when it is required. These screenings can be given in kindergarten through third grade, and appropriate assessment to detect dyslexia would include screenings for phonemic awareness and several other things that are in your handout. But this would not exclude other tests that might be needed. As of June 25, 2015, Governor Malloy of Connecticut signed an act concerning students with dyslexia, substitute bill number 1054. On behalf of these students, we accept and ask you and New York State to accept a similar bill and section 1 pertaining to dyslexia, which states that the Commissioner of Education will designate an employee of the Department of Education to be responsible for providing information and assistance to local and regional boards of education and parents or guardians of students relating to the detection and recognition of and evidence-based structured literacy interventions for students with dyslexia. A bill like this will change people's lives for the better. The evidence-based structured literacy intervention, a multisensory approach, also helps those with traumatic brain injury and Lyme disease, since those are have brain-based effects. Dyslexia is often overlooked, as is its new terminology among parents' learning differences. As people were more aware, more action would be taken to help this large group of students more effectively. The studies, the research, the multisensory teaching that has successfully helped these children and been utilized over the last 100 years is now largely being recognized and accepted as the effective intervention. However, more delivery and awareness is needed for our children. It affects their welfare, their health, and that of our community. Building awareness of dyslexia and a bill like Connecticut's Bill 1054 will change lives for the better. A bill like this will help students on the front end, where money will be utilized for direct interventions, assuring student success in school as prevention for this 20% of the population, instead of maintaining a trend of increased school failure that is welded to incarceration, race, or welfare roles and their associated appropriations on the back end. This endeavor will be effort well spent. I come before you today to respectfully request Dyslexia Awareness Month be adopted in our County of Ulster, the state, and the nation. We also request that Dyslexia Awareness Month in Ulster County not only be for 2015, but for all the years over the next decades to come. We also respectfully request that this committee spearhead delivery of a bill like that of Connecticut with exclusive focus on dyslexia to help our children. Thank you for your time. This endeavor will be effort well spent. Thank
you.
Yes, I'm located specifically in Smittendale.
Okay.
And I have reached out to several, and I'm expecting a phone call, and their appointment is not set up yet, but yeah. Well, several.
Did you know that your state representative
either? George Amador.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah.
Is this the entire bill?
Well, this, thanks to Nettie, this is, I frankly don't know. I believe it is.
Also, this probably is an amendment to the state education department.
No, the governor.
I mean, this is from Connecticut.
Yes, it is.
Right. That makes sense, though. I mean, because everything you say about, you know, reading skills and the percentages of kids entering school that can't read or mix up their words.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I was on it. But it makes sense. It would just make sense for screening purposes. This is why tied hands, you know, the hands of a child who mm-hmm. doesn't know how to learn,
right.
and can't learn because they have this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you call this a disability?
Frankly, no, I would not. Absolutely not.
It's a different way. They need a different way of learning.
Okay.
It's part of being a disability.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the standard practice of learning how we teach children today is for the 80% mm-hmm. that use their left side.
Mm-hmm.
The other, quote, 17.5% to 20% use the right side of the brain. And our learning experience is not set up for the right side of the brain.
However, if I can interject, these interventions are effective and they do work to actually set up the reading center in the left side of the brain. But you have to use this specific type of approach in order to reach that kind of brain. And
dyslexic people tend to be visual learners.
Mm-hmm.
They learn from visualization rather than the written word.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give them a book and tell them to sit down and read it, first of all, they'll procrastinate. They won't want to do it. Second mm-hmm. of all, the learning experience is next to nil. But if you give them a book that has a visual learning experience, they learn at a rate possibly faster than mm-hmm. children that learn from written word.
Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, average to way above average. So when you teach them, they really
they also
think about
tend to be high IQ people.
So with this proclamation, are you going to come back before the legislature?
I would certainly be glad to fulfill any role that's necessary.
That's going to happen?
Yeah. Well, this is scheduled to be voted on October 20th. And everyone has the floor. Anybody can get up the street.
Well, you are the sponsor. I would like to be a co-sponsor. And I would suggest that you bring the group in to give them privilege of the floor.
Yes.
Well, you have to ask the chairman.
With your permission.
What good is the proclamation?
No, I would appreciate the rest of the committee co-sponsoring the resolution with me.
Sure.
So across the continuum of different types of dyslexia,
yes.
So there's levels of severity.
Yes, there are.
And
complexity.
And then so there's I myself, I have mixed dominance. So that gave me some right eye dominant, right leg dominant, but left-handed.
Sure.
And, but it didn't, because I'm looking through the checklist all this and I didn't have any of those symptoms at all. So
mm-hmm.
I know I'm not dyslexic, and I was actually a very fast learner, and I was
mm-hmm.
good at reading, and I was
mm-hmm.
excelled, you know,
mm-hmm.
to the top of the class and doing math problems.
Right.
But it gave me more issues with coordination or,
mm-hmm.
Force activities at a younger age, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of curious if there's any type of
In terms of screenings, the screenings also include frequently those motor pieces that you're talking about, the movement, the coordination, and those kinds of things.
So, and I guess the question I'm asking, in the process of doing the screening, is it possible that, like, some people will be eliminated from having dyslexia and it will determine that they have something else? But through
that's a very good question. I think what the criteria at that point becomes is whether there's a problem within the academic classroom. And if you're talking about participation in sports, normally speaking, or those kinds of activities, normally what happens is the parents are the people that usually come to the school, speak to the teachers, and then it goes through a process. Or they'll request, they have the right to request from the special education department or those types of offices to be able to have an assessment done.
And then, like you said about Lyme disease, there's some crossover with symptoms. I had Lyme disease myself 8 years ago, and I can, you know, give a personal testimony.
Yeah.
Some of those symptoms are similar from, you know, in terms of sound processing and things like that in your brain where it processes sounds and and stimuli around your brain, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you might end up, through the screening process, they might end up detecting people that have Lyme disease.
Oh, absolutely.
Not,
and also parents who have had children with Lyme disease to see, and the doctor and the parents use these symptoms manifest, because the research is showing that the, sometimes the characteristics are similar to dyslexia. So, yeah.
So it's through a process of elimination, this will be good all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just want to get this straight one more time.
Yeah.
So we teach people who are right side of the brain dominant.
We're talking not about dominant.
Teaching them in
language-based areas, not necessarily the motor language.
So left side of the brain is
rapid word reading.
Okay, so the right side, okay.
Creativity,
Right.
And the
So you'll come for the proclamation,
sort of, the other
one. Yeah.
And if you can see us both as far as what's going on the state level, as well as try to reach out to your representatives.
I know it's an unfunded mandate in the state of New York, as many other states, and I'm not sure the exact status of the legislation that's come forth in 2012, but it's an unfunded mandate. So, and also, this also has implications for the types of teacher training at colleges and that kind of thing. But those of us that are in the field are aware of this and really trying to step up to the plate in terms of supporting states and localities.
The problem is the awareness.
Right now,
I say dyslexia, you either don't know it or you consider it to be an impairment or an illness or
you want to run away
disease.
From it, Exactly, and that's why we're a lot of us are looking at the terminology, learning difference, but that doesn't give you enough clout, if you will, in terms of obtaining funding to have special education programs for learning disabled students. So that's why that model has been used in the past. But certainly, to be these children are very bright. They see that there is a difference the way they.
About the people in general. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and thank you.
That's right. Okay, so, on the resolution?
Aye.
Aye. Very good. All right. Thank you.
If you printed a book backwards and read it through on your own, would that fix
it? I can do that.
Read wrong?
I can read upside down backwards as fast as I can read forward.
Okay.
All right, we'll move on. Resolution. Recently amending the 2015 budget to accept increased funding from Nearsdale to alcohol and substance abuse services. More money to manage, but I don't think there's an additional county contribution.
I think this is pass-through.
I think about $21,000. Yep, buddy. Discussion?
Well, second.
Move it.
Second. I'll move it for this one.
Well, I'm reading the letter that's from Oasis. And it says, effective July.
Let it move?
Yeah.
Very good.
All right. Discussion?
Yes, I'm reading your letter from Oasis. And it says that effective July 1st, 2014, it's the SNAP program, a number of significant changes to the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program occurred, which may reduce the benefit to certain individuals, and blah, blah, blah. To address this, they're adjusting our SNAP revenue state aid. So it kind of reflects as to why a nutritional program is being funded through the Office of Alcohol and Substance Abuse, unless it's for treatment programs, to offer nutrition and treatment programs.
I don't know. That's a question.
That's one of the questions I'm going to...
Yeah, I think it is being provided through the regional healthcare support service.
Where do you see rehabilitation support services? Tell me that.
On the third page.
The provider name?
The provider right there.
Okay, so this is for group home nutritional programs for substance abuse.
So what about people who are in the group home that are received SNAP potentially?
Well, I'm sure all of them are there.
This is not legal. This is ministerial.
All right, rehabilitation services. So it's basically, we're in a contractual agreement, state mandated, for group homes for chemical dependency, and they're giving us more money in the SNAP program to feed them.
To be able to be living here, people that are, obviously.
So it's saying that there was significant changes in the federal SNAP program.
In the SNAP program, that it said it's going to negatively impact people that would have previously qualified, but under the new guidelines are not going to qualify, so that these adjustments are made to try and offset that.
Right, for residential service providers.
So essentially, they're trying to make sure that people that have little or no income that are at these drug and alcohol rehabilitation centers are going to have quality food and nutrition to eat.
Until I get the definitive answer. Addiction control, unless it had to do with ethanol. So that's used in these all. I want to find out Okay. How we, you know, qualify or what we do with that money.
I guess, you know, since it was a big narcotic addiction problem, but it's all, you know, balances,
I do have an issue with this, because they're all coming in at the same time, okay? Office of Alcohol and Substance Abuse for Group Homes for Chemical Dependency. Now, in the UCAN deliberations that we had, we wanted to make sure that group housing or sober homes or however you want to call it is all state regulated and all state, not funded per se, but I'm sure they are anyway, supervised. And so what we're doing is we're increasing the amount of money, even though it's state aid for group homes. And the reason why I ask this is because there is a proposed chemical dependency group home in a residential area in Silvis that's gone on the radar big time with my constituents. And little is known about what's going to go on there except that this company, Residential Rehabilitation Services, is running it. Not for profit. It makes millions of dollars a year in profits. And I'm cautious because I want to find out how it's going to affect not only Ulster County, but our my town, which I represent, which is the reason why I'm here.
Sure, we have one similar. We have the Rasmus project.
Yes. Sure. But that's actually more than just a residential. That's a residential treatment facility.
It's treatment facility.
Right.
But it's an alternative to incarceration as well.
But this is just for supported housing, not for treatment centers. And that would, to me, would say something like sober homes.
Right.
So I think that we need more sober homes in the county, obviously, because we've got an epidemic of chemical dependency. What is the one term that a health professional used to describe me? He said I was a NIMBY. And this came from the director of the Mental Health Association of New York, who was also a fellow schoolmate when I went to high school. Not in my neighborhood. Not in my backyard, whatever. Yeah, all right, I had to actually look it up because I didn't know what a NIMBY was. So I think that, I know the county's doing a state mandated program. I know we're using tests through dollars, but it is affecting our communities. And I think that we just need to get a handle on things.
Carl, and this is, these are different, they change the rates. And it's, I don't completely understand it, but it's actually discussed, it's somewhat, it's like, in one of the attachments that many of the that they provided for the, for the documentation for these things. And
at gross management course, peer course,
you know, the beds, training course, and so on. So this is really about based on formula and funding.
So we're talking about an increase of $750 per bed annually that went into effect April 1st, 2015.
Which means that it's related to our state budget.
No, I understand. State mandated.
So
all state mandated stuff. So.
Okay.
Actually, I would, to the chairman, I would like to ask our legislative clerk, Nettie, if you could look up a resolution from 2007, and it was a resolution that was brought forth, I believe, by either the mental health department, you know, it was sponsored by, I believe it was sponsored by a health committee, to ask the state for more residential components.
Okay.
I'd like to see, because someone had referenced that to me a couple years ago. I was on the legislature at the time. Right. Residential chemical dependency glucose. Asking the state for more residential chemical dependency.
Duly noted. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Yes,
for discussion.
Second. Thank you. Okay,
I know that they provide courier service for subpoenas.
Okay.
Yes. And I know in the past meeting there was a, all right, I will go there.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. All right. Thank you very much. New business, old business.
What's this thing on Golden Hill?
They didn't come.
Golden Hill.
They didn't show up. Jenny had invited them. I don't know if she reached out to them and kind of canceled. But
we have no new business. Make a motion for adjournment.
Second. All in favor?
Off the record, Mr. Chairman.
Are we up? Is it covered now?